Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's program is brought to you by the Farmers Market Farm Stand at 76 Montauk Highway in West Hampton, New York. That is 76 Montauk Highway, West Hampton, New York. Open in April through the season.
I'm Erica Wides, host of Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sharp and Hot. I am your host, Chef Emily Peterson, broadcasting to you live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This is episode number 129. Sitting outside our window at the table I wish we had a webcam on is MacGyver circa 1992. He's so cute. I have like a place in my heart for this look of guy because I was obsessed with MacGyver as a kid. He doesn't look like an old MacGyver. He looks like prime MacGyver time. And he keeps looking at me and smiling, so I have to not look at him because I can feel myself blushing. If you are finding us for the first time because you saw Heritage Radio Network featured on CBS This Morning yesterday, welcome. I am so happy that you have found Sharp and Hot. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you can go to any one of my or Heritage's social media channels and click the link, and you can see this awesome package that CBS put together about our radio station. And I found myself thanking somebody up for recognizing my little podcast that could. And so if you have found your way here, awesome. I hope that you find a place where you can ask me all your dumb cooking questions, and I will never make you feel dumb because there's literally no such thing. So I will say I got a couple of people who contacted me via social media channels, and they were like, so what is it, charcoal or gas? Because that was the question that we were talking about then, on the show that made it to air. And you'll just have to stand by and find out. No, I'm just kidding. Actually, David is in the booth engineering the show. Hi, David.
Hi.
I gave you no heads up that I was going to do that. None. You know, David, I was going to ask you, do you think it'd be possible that we could just play a little clip of the CBS piece, the answer to the charcoal or gas question at the end of the episode today?
Sure.
Yeah. I don't know if that's something that you're able to pull up without like any notification from me prior to 205.
I'll see what I can do.
You are a magician. Now, David, you were also on television yesterday morning. How do you feel?
I think the back of my head looks amazing.
You looked great.
Thank you so much.
So have people recognized the back of your head yet? Has anyone like smiled at you?
Not that I am aware of. I sent it to my mom and it made the rounds through my family as a result, but other than that, I haven't achieved the celebrity that you have thus far.
So I have to say, it's going to sound really narcissistic to say that, but I swear I was just walking down the street outside of Roberta's and somebody smiled and waved at me that I've never seen before. And they were like meek about it. And they were like, hey, and I was like, hi. And I was like, they might have just been crazy. Like, it doesn't mean that they saw the CBS thing, right?
Oh, are you asking me?
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'm just asking the universe.
I mean, yeah, like I said, that is Chef Emily Peterson, doesn't she record here at Roberta's?
Oh my God. That's so crazy.
This is it.
This is the big time. You know, Groucho Marx was famous for saying that he was an overnight success. It just took him 47 big breaks. And I feel like that's been my career a little bit. So maybe this is number 48 for me. We'll see. Anyway, to the meat of the show, I want to thank the Farmers Market Farm Stand and my father for being this, who is my father, for being the sponsor of today's episode. He was in the Bushwick neighborhood because he works with a company called Fair Resources, where he gets a lot of the stuff that he sells out east at the farm stand, and his friend wanted pizza from Roberta's. So I'm standing on the street just minutes before we went on air, and my dad is handing me food through the window. So I have some Olympia Provisions pork rillettes, a hunk of feta, a hunk of Parmesan, and some sort of smoked ham that has no label on it, because my father's really good at showing love with food, which is how I ended up who I am as an adult. So thank you to my dad. Speaking of food, I have two guests joining me in the studio today, and I'm so excited to welcome them. I have Judith Walsh, who is the founder of Art Smart, and Joanna McFarland, who is the tour guide who graciously showed me around the Feast Your Eyes tour that you guys have put together at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. Welcome.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
Thank you so much.
I'm so excited to share this with everyone because this is prime visit New York season. There are so many people listening from around the country, potentially around the world, who are planning their summer trips to New York City. And I'm so excited that I figured out that you guys are connected to me through a mutual friend and you've put together this incredible tour. So, Judith, why don't you give us a background of Art Smart? How did you come? What is it? How did you come to know this was your life's calling? Because you are an entrepreneur and I love your story.
The main idea was really when I was lecturing at the Met and realizing, I think the aha moment came when I was giving a tour to Dr. Ruth. This massive public tour with about 80 people. And if you know Dr. Ruth, she's really short and she was right up front and she kept asking all these interesting questions that were aligned with her personal interests. And the other 79 people in the group just had to listen on. And my aha moment was, why is she here in this public group? Like, why is she not on a private tour going through and asking these questions in a more engaging manner? And then I really decided to sort of step up and create Art Smart. And of course, it took, you know, as you said, 47 times. It took a lot of work in the process. But my vision from the start was to really bring engaging art experiences to people who want to be engaged, and using the venues in New York City to do that. And so that was 15 years ago. We're still at it.
And the Met, I found fascinating, lets you do tours. Like, you don't have to be an employee of the Met. So how does that, did you approach them and say, I want to do this thing?
I have to admit, there was a little bit of an awkward period because when I had the aha moment, I was actually lecturing for them.
You were working for them?
So I was lecturing for them and worked for them. And it was contractual, and it was not against my contract to think above and beyond whatever they wanted me to do. And I think that they were sort of surprised. And but now they actually offer private tours too. They're just not, you know, with people like Joanna and I. So I think, you know, that was a little bit of a contribution to the Met on that part, was that now they do have that offering, and I had to sort of encourage that a little bit. But but they got over it. We're good friends now. And
good for you, though, because I feel like those are the kinds of things that people sort of shy away from. And maybe, like, I think a lot about women and women entrepreneurs, and I feel like it would be the, like, in my nature to not do that because I'd be scared of that confrontation or just avoid that confrontation at all costs, even if I knew that that's what I should do. So good for you for doing it. What's the first tour that you put together to do on your own?
Oh, the first one, we started with what I was most passionate about at the time. And I think that that's what gave me the confidence to really go above and beyond, because that my personality is the same way. I just want to, you know, make sure everyone's happy. But the first tours were actually for kids. And I think that still, that element still makes us stay true to keeping it fun and keeping it engaging. So, you know, one of our early celebratory tours was a Harry Potter tour through the Metropolitan Museum of Art. And I remember people wanting to, you know, they just lined up for that. And just so many, I remember one Met employee looked at me. She said, I've never seen so many kids so excited to be in this building before. And that was just, sent chills through my spine. So I was like, that's why I'm doing this. So
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So how did you come around to do the Feast Your Eyes? I keep saying Feast Your... We have a show on the network called Feast Your Ears, so that's stuck in my head.
Well, you know what? It's Feast All of the Senses, and that's what I actually love about it, because there is a little bit of everything in there. There's eyes, and that's where the art tour comes in, but there is ears, what you're hearing, and there's the sense of the tasting, of course, that comes afterwards. But this art tour was always in the back of my brain as a dream art tour to develop. And I've been really wanting to develop it for about 5 years. And I tried on my own when our team was younger, and it didn't quite work. It wasn't what I really imagined it could be. And then I had Joanna come on our team, and she's just been stellar from the start. And I think a little over a year ago, I approached her with the idea, and I said, you know, what do you think about this? Can you help me develop it? And, you know, she, like anything I throw her way, she, most everything, she just did it with a big smile. She's like, oh my gosh, yes, this is amazing. I love food. I'm a foodie. Did you know that? And just, she just brings such enthusiasm to the table and has made, she's just made this whole project really dreamy. And then, and I know she's going to talk. And then who's missing is our mutual friend, Kalila. Kalila was the other ad that, while Joanna was excited to take it on, she and I both said, well, we don't know that much about food history yet. And so we hired in Kalila. She's been our consultant to make sure that everything that we present is really accurate and really in depth. So
Kalila is one of, she may be the smartest person I've ever met personally. And anytime I feel like I'm smart and I need to like check myself, I just ask Kalila a question, and then like she's just this incredible wealth of knowledge. Okay, so we need to take a quick break, and then when we come back, Joanna, if you would sort of relive this tour that we went through together for the audience, because I want everyone to like experience how cool it was to be there with a plan and someone who knows what they're talking about. We will be right back after the break.
Today's program is brought to you by the Farmers Market Farm Stand at 76 Montauk Highway, West Hampton, New York, providing local fruits and vegetables, heirloom tomatoes, local shellfish, handmade Vermont maple syrup, and our very own honey produced by our very own honeybees here on the east end of Long Island. Ask us about our imported cheese selection, as well as our artisanal bacon and sausage. And don't forget our locally baked breads and desserts. Open in April through the season, Farmers Market Farm Stand welcomes back our returning customers with the very best of all things locally grown and produced. Come by and visit on your way out east, just minutes from the West Hampton train station and the Hampton Jitney. Make sure to fill your weekend in the Hamptons with all that the East End's farms have to offer. The Farmers Market Farm Stand, again, is at 76 Montauk Highway in West Hampton, New York. They say...
Welcome back to Sharp and Hot. You guys, MacGyver's looking right at me. He's looking right at me. Oh my God. Dave.
So
he
cute.
Can he hear me? I don't think he can hear me.
If you talk loud enough, he can.
Welcome back, everyone. I am joined in the studio by Judith Walsh, owner, and are you CEO of ArtSmart? Do you call yourself
the
CEO?
CEO, really founder.
Founder of ArtSmart.
That's my favorite.
And we are going to introduce Joanna McFarlane, who took me on the tour of the Met, this Feast Your Eyes tour. So, Judith, do you want to do the introductions? Because you know Joanna best
of
all. I did.
We were just joking while we were off the air that, like Kalila is to Emily, it's just this person with so much knowledge and so much enthusiasm, and every question you ask comes to, you know, this incredible answer. Well, Joanna is like that for me. I'm so lucky to have her on the ArtSmart team. So I'd like to introduce Joanna.
Oh, no, I'm blushing. I can't even see MacGyver.
Joanna, welcome. Okay, so I met you at the Egyptian sculpture in the Met. Now, I have to say, I've been to the Met probably 20 times in my lifetime. I have never gone with a plan, and so I usually end up exhausted and crying and eating a hot dog in the baking sun. This was a revelation that you can go with someone who knows what they're doing, and the museum becomes like the a setting or a backdrop for the rest of the tour, where you, Joanna, are so articulate and like, look right here, look at this, forget everything else that's going on, look right here. So we start in the Egyptian wing. Talk to me about the basket because that was found in an undisturbed tomb, because I have not stopped thinking about, I'm like, my science geek mind is like, that's amazing.
Yeah, so when Judith first started talking about, let's do a food tour, I immediately thought, there's an actual Egyptian meal that's 3,500 years old, perfectly preserved, in a basket for everyone to see, with jujube berries, dates, raisins, and perfectly preserved bread, two different types of bread. And it's just absolutely incredible, the dryness of the Egyptian desert just completely preserves these things for thousands and thousands of years. And I always think that it makes it seem as though it was just yesterday. So you think, oh, the Egyptians aren't that different from us. They're not so far away. But at the same time, then you really try to wrap your mind around how long 3,500 years is. And then you feel this big gulf of time. It's amazing.
And you can look right at these raisins. It's just so fascinating. And then we walked through and there are, would you call them dioramas, where all the carving of the people who are making bread, and was diorama the right word?
I mean, archaeologists call them models, but okay. I always tell people, think of shoebox dioramas. So they're perfect architectural models of buildings, but they're populated with all these tiny little doll-like models as well. And they're perfectly preserved with the paint, plaster, and in a lot of cases, even the handmade clothes for the dolls and everything. And they're doing all the everyday things to prepare food for the person that was buried there, in this case, Meketre. So it's
and they were
incredible.
Never intended to be seen, right?
Yeah, they were. The Met found them almost 100 years ago in a secret chamber of a tomb that had already been robbed, and it was perfectly sealed. And so nobody had ever thought that anybody was going to see that this was for the actual use of the person who is buried there, for his spirit in the afterlife. And that's one of the things that's incredible about all the different aspects of food and culture that we look at in this tour, because it's in this case, you know, the how vital food is for the afterlife in ancient Egypt, and how much that is a huge part of what they want to keep on being able to enjoy.
I think one of the emotion, like, I was just so touched by the humanity of, like, the human experience. And it sounds like so much more epic than maybe it should, but it was like, God, like, it is this thread. Like, everyone eats all of the time, and it's so important to people that they're investing thousands and thousands of whatever the equivalent of dollars were, although I learned there was no currency in ancient Egypt. That was like a revel. I had no idea. But there's like little bits of ancient grain in these models that no one was ever intended to see. And it's of real people making real food. And that was amazing. So then we sort of flash forward in time. Talk to me about, was it a Flemish painting with the seafood monger, that sort of cheeky?
Oh, well remembered. It was a Flemish painting. See, most people would assume Dutch, because when you think of those market scenes, sometimes they think of the later Dutch ones. This is just an absolutely gorgeous painting. And actually, we had kind of put the tour together and we were walking through it. And all of a sudden, we stopped, Judith and I. And I said, Judith, look. And it's so brand new because it was just recently discovered in Belgium. So this thing has been at God knows where for almost 500 years. And it's this beautiful, colorful, giant oil painting of a fish market in Antwerp. And it's one of the first real genre scenes, so like non-religious, non-historical, large-scale paintings in Europe. And it's, you can just see this fishmonger cutting gorgeous salmon steaks, and you see the herring and the carp and everything. And it's just really vividly brought to life. And it's a great way, entry point into thinking about how differently that sort of, when we think of farm to table now, you know, that the freshness of ingredients and how important they were. It's interesting to see you know, which cultures really had that and obviously thought it was important enough to even put it in these gorgeous paintings, and which cultures actually didn't have that sort of obsession with farm to table.
And I love that. So then we went into a room where you pointed out that almost every painting around us had a lemon in it, because it's like people had, if you had money to commission a painting, so the Flemish painting wouldn't have been commissioned, right? That was just, or I don't know, would it have, is that just an artist making a piece of work?
That one, it's hard to tell because it's one of the first of its kind, it was from 1568. So that one I think would be a little bit harder to tell, but a lot of those scenes, because that artist produced so many similar scenes, it seems like it probably would have been something that he had a bunch of them and then sold them sort of in a shop.
I want you to know, side note, I went home and that's now where I want to travel to. I want to go to Antwerp, Brussels, that area, where I'm just like, I want to know where that comes from, because I feel like those are my people. Like anyone who because you said there was there's my dad and Phil out the window. There they are. Hi, guys. Do you want to come in and say hi? Yeah, sure. Come on in. Come on. This is radio gold. and I will say, I sent my dad the picture of the fishmonger. That's a picture of that painting, because that's, my dad was a commercial fisherman, but when I was a little kid, and so I sent him that and the detail of the oyster bucket. Let's see what happens if they come in. I thank you guys for being flexible too and letting my dad crash the party.
Here they are.
Hey, Daddy, talking to Joanna's microphone, and tell us about the painting that I sent you, the painting of the fishmonger. You have no idea.
No.
Okay, so then just stand there until we're done with the show, because we're actually trying to get work done here. Anyway, so that was a huge highlight for me, because I literally grew up, the smell of low tide is the smell of my childhood, and I loved it.
That's so cool.
We flash forward again, and there are the drinking games that you told me about that were hilarious, and I'm in the middle of reading book one of Game of Thrones, and I know all of the stuff that's happening, and I'm trying really hard to not find out what happens in Game of Thrones, but it's that kind of era, right? And I'm imagining this long table of German dudes, and they have this thing. So I put a picture of it up on Instagram this morning. So explain to me and the listeners how this thing worked.
Yeah, this is absolutely gorgeous, gold-plated silver statuette of the goddess of the hunt, Diana, on top of a stag. And from afar, it just looks like a maybe, 10-inch high statuette, until you realize, until you read or are told, that it's actually what they call an automaton, basically a robot. It's a wind-up doll from around 1620, and you would crank it up, and it would go all the way down a huge feasting table filled with German princes or Austrian princes. And Habsburgs had one exactly like that, actually. And then whoever it stopped in front of ran out of gas. they had to... there's a detachable head on the stag, and then all of a sudden they realize it's empty, or not quite empty, it's filled with brandy, and they have to drink the entire thing in one go. So this was just this really beautiful, elaborately expensive drinking robot, drinking game robot.
And what I love about this piece is that it makes 25-year-olds relatable from the 1600s. You know, because you're used to seeing, people painted in velvet with their swords or whatever and their crests, and it feels very different from us. But then it's no, these people had dinners, and they wanted to impress their friends, and this was something that they did, and that to me was totally fascinating and awesome. And then let's see, we walk through, we get to Art Deco, right? And there was a whole beautiful stainless steel cocktail set that was put together, and that there's a picture of that up on I think I put it up on Instagram also. And on the rooftop, you can get cocktails at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, which is amazing. And they have their own signature cocktails, right?
Which is kind of a new thing. Last year is the first year that it was always beer and wine. But now, everybody has to have signature cocktails, because this is the great, second great cocktail golden age of America now.
So then when you're done and you've done this incredible tour, which I think it's obvious in my enthusiasm, I cannot recommend it highly enough. You have the opportunity, and maybe Judith, if you want to talk about after the tour, you can go and eat or drink based on what you've just learned, right?
Yep. We have two optional tastings afterwards. The first one is the Aldo Selm Wine Bar. and Autosome came on the tour, was equally enthusiastic, blown. He just said his mind was blown away by all of the ideas that Joanna communicated during the tour. So he came up with this really incredible pairing between food and wine. And this lighter fare, it's wonderful. And their staff is so incredible, so professional, but down to earth. It just, I've had a great time every time I've gone there. And so that was one of the tastings that this comes along with for the Feast Your Eyes Tour and Tasting. And then the other one is by Amali. And that also has another special story where we reached out to them and it turned out their chef was also an art historian. It's very funny. We all have this in common where we love art history, but we've done different things with it. And so she was so enthusiastic in creating this 6-course feast with 6 different cultures. And I cannot talk enough about all of the creativity she's pulled in. But she, one of the fun things in her tasting is that they have found an automaton, a drinking robot that she will bring out for her tastings. So
that
I can't wait to see that.
Is awesome. Yeah. I can't believe one of those existed, but I'm excited.
Museum that you're still allowed to touch.
Exactly. Amali's great. They found it. They were so enthusiastic. They found it. I can't wait for them to pull it out.
That is awesome. So your website is artsmart.com, mm-hmm. and you are @getartsmart on Twitter and on Instagram.
Yep.
And is there anything else that we want to tell the people other than look you up, come to New York City, set aside a couple of hours to do the tour and the tasting, because this is the kind of experience you will remember for the rest of your life. And you really can't do this. I could not have done this on my own. As someone who went to art school and is a professional food eater, I could not have had the experience that I had without you guys. So thank you.
Judith. It was our pleasure.
You are really
so much fun.
And Joanna, you are like, I hope, how people feel about me, which is I asked you the dumbest questions and I was like, I really want to know the answer, and I'm going to put my feelings of dumbness aside and go for it. And you are warm and engaging and super smart, and you never made me feel dumb one time. So thank you. It was an awesome, awesome opportunity to spend the time with both of you guys. So the website is artsmart.com, and get ArtSmart on Instagram and Twitter. I am @ChefEmilyP on Twitter. And I have a whole bookshelf of books that PR people are generous enough to send to me when they want to get their cookbook authors on our radio station. And the thing is, I'm never going to be able to use those books ever, because there's just more recipes than there are days in the rest of my life that I'm going to get through. So if you like taking pictures of your food and you use the #sharpandhot on Instagram, I'll be able to see the picture that you post, and then I will mail you one of those books for free. No strings attached. I'll throw in some stickers from Heritage Radio Network and just say thank you for being a listener, and it will clear off some of the space, because I literally had to go to IKEA and buy an additional bookshelf just for the cookbooks that I'm never going to get to. Not that I don't love them. They're all wonderful books. It's just that there's just not enough time in the day, and I would much rather give them to people who are actually going to use them. Also, if you've been listening to the show for a while and you have a moment, if you could go to iTunes and rate us, that would be amazing, because as people are finding us, you can encourage them to click download and listen, because anything that you guys say that's good will encourage new listeners to stick around, which I thoroughly appreciate. I know that I read a statistic on that NPR has like 7.4 billion hours of podcasts or something available right now. So I recognize that it's thick, muddy water. And so the time that you have chosen to spend with me, I am truly, truly grateful for. I want to say thank you to my new producer, Colleen Leahy, who is doing this from afar in Washington, D.C. She has come on board and is going to help me book guests and organize myself so that I can focus on having a better run show, which, you know, there's some charm in things going off the rails and into a ditch. But thank you, thank you, thank you so much to Colleen. Thank you to David for engineering the show, and for Malcolm Nice Peter for the theme song and Heritage Radio Network. And my dad, who's standing here in the studio still, thank you for sponsoring the show, Daddy.
Do you want to hear that clip?
Grills? Yeah, perfect. So if you were watching the CBS thing yesterday morning, you saw that there was a call-in question where Keith from New Jersey asked if I preferred charcoal or gas. So we'll play that answer for you now. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. And until next week, keep playing with fire and knives. The gas grill is awesome for Tuesday nights when you want to turn it on, couple of clicks. It's lit, it's hot, you throw your chicken on there, you throw your sausages on there, whatever it is, you turn it off and it goes off. It's great as like an, if you think of it as an outdoor stove that will provide an extra layer of flavor, an extra layer of smoke and some char. A charcoal grill, for $20, you can get a little Smoky Joe that can travel with you. It can go with you to the beach. It can go with you camping. It can go onto your back patio if you have just, you know, a 6-foot by 8-foot little rectangle of pavement that you're allowed to use. And you get a bag of charcoal, fire it up, and it's like a ritual. Now, human beings are drawn to television food programming because when we're channel surfing and we see fire and we see food, our old DNA that's still kicking around from when we were cavemen are like, oh, satisfying.
Sharp and hot with Chef Family. Sharp and hot with Chef Family.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.